This show is brought to you by earpeeler.com.
Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audio download and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/radmetal. Over 150,000 titles to choose for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Tonight's episode of Radioactive Metal is dedicated to the memory of ex-Pantera and Hell Yeah drummer Vinnie Paul.
Hey, what's happening? This is Matt from Gruesome, and you're listening to Radioactive Metal, so turn it up, man.
Horns up, metalheads. This is Radioactive Metal, your source for news, views, tunes, and interviews. Here are your hosts, Snowy, Rock, Kareem, and Aaron.
Horns up, everyone! Welcome to a gruesome, now that's too easy, episode of Radioactive Metal. This is episode 510, and I'm Snowy White.
This is Rock.
And I'm Kareem, and you know what, Snowy, this needs to be a hell of a time show.
Ooh.
And hello, I'm Aaron. I'm here, listeners. Hello.
Me.
Hi guys, so check it out, listeners. Do you know what you should be drinking as you listen to the show? I mean, Kareem, you know what they should all be drinking as they listen to the show, correct?
Oh, I know. Wink, wink.
Okay, nudge, maybe nudge. We don't know. We should all be drinking True Cult Coffee, because True Cult Coffee loves this show. You love this show, so support the show by supporting True Cult Coffee, because
that's right.
They have once again possessed this show with the demons found in their coffee beans. They sell coffee and souls. True story, Coffee Bean Occulta's great-great-grandfather actually helped broker the deal between the devil and Robert Johnson.
Like, yeah, I bought my True Cult Coffee soul on eBay for $9.99.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, they sell
them on
there too.
Coffee and souls. It's a buyer's market, really. You know. But anyway, so no gimmicky flavors, no mixing. This is single origin beans. This is premium coffee. Listeners, you know I'm not a coffee drinker if you've been paying attention, but I will be soon. There is two bags of True Cold Coffee waiting for me in Virginia at my buddy's house. We're going to crack them open together, hopefully do some video footage of us drinking them and making the recipes we've talked about, like the famous church burner, hopefully also the Motorhead. And of what would the show be without the Canadian Death March? So we'll try those out. And so let's see here. What are they? So it's Cafe Storm. And then, of course, my favorite, Mior Calvete. Now, Mior Calvete is the blackest of the coffee roasts, with that hint of chocolate. It's Nicaraguan coffee beans. And I think that's where I'm going to start, because, you know, why start as a lightweight? Just dive in, you know, just dive in. I don't want the gateway coffee. I'm going to go for the hard stuff. But listeners, maybe you're thinking that, hey, you know, every now and then I run out of coffee and I don't like to run out of coffee. Well, guess what? True Cold Coffee now lets you subscribe. You can save 10% by subscribing. Go to trvekvltcoffee.com and get your subscription today. And if you subscribe today, you will also get two free metal albums, one of them being Hellfrost, The Pagan Sun, and Cyst, The Frozen Casket.
Mm-hmm. What? Really?
For real.
I cannot recommend that Cyst record enough. It's amazing.
I mean, is there any drainage involved with the Cyst record?
You drain your coffee.
There's an ointment for it now. But anyway, Snowman, back to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to say right now that I'm not drinking True Cult Coffee right now. I'm actually got a whiskey and Pepsi going on.
Whiskey and Pepsi?
In memory of we lost a pretty important person within the metal world yesterday as we speak. And up here in my neck of the woods, okay, we almost lost someone like on my watch that I'm going to be getting into very soon. So without further ado, here's to you, Vinny. How's everyone doing?
I'd be better if it was Coke and not Pepsi. That's what a black tooth grin is.
Jesus.
Yeah. Nick, Christ. Nick,
oh,
my Nick,
God. Oh, yeah. Oh, because, my God. No. Oh. I mean,
just scratch your nuts and get over it, my dude.
Yeah.
Well, one, why stop scratching your nuts?
Okay. Two, speaking.
If Mike Year was here, it'd be okay to get a Pepsi. Just one Pepsi.
That's all I wanted. Yeah.
I want just one Pepsi.
She wouldn't give it to me.
Yeah, but you know, Pepsi's that crisp, cool feeling. With Coke, you just get, you don't get that crisp, cool feeling. They want you to fucking share with Janice and fuck sharing with Janice.
If you want to talk about nitpicking, Snowy's not one to talk because he insists on calling a Jack and Coke a Lemmy, you know? So that's nitpicking.
But why? It's true.
Jack, why is that?
But, well, you insist on going to a bar and then ordering a Lemmy. So
yeah,
that's what
it's called these days. If you go to a rock club and you ask for a Lemmy, they'll pour you a Jack and Coke. That's not nitpicking. It's just been renamed.
Look, can't explain things to somebody who doesn't understand the context of alcohol.
I guess so.
Yes, that's way beyond me. I only understand the concept of Diet Coke.
See, that's being endorsed on this show. Pepsi's not one of them.
And the occasional Fresca.
No.
Rocco's a Spartan. He doesn't know Coke.
No, not in the other sense of the word. No. Nope.
Well, I'm glad everyone is in a talkative mood tonight because I gotta say, I'm really excited for tonight's creature feature because not only is this gentleman in a bunch of kick-ass bands, I would call him a personal friend of the show as well. We've had Mr. Matt Harvey from numerous outfits that we'll get into a little bit later, but yeah, it's always good to talk to Matt, and whenever he's in one of our towns, he makes sure to hang out and have a grand old time, whether it's with Coke or Pepsi or whatever. It doesn't really matter to him.
No, Pepsi doesn't matter. It's no Pepsi.
So without further ado, I think we get the train a rolling.
It's time for the metal fix. My naughty bits are tingling with excitement.
It's coming round the bend.
Okay, who wants to talk about what?
I don't know where.
I honestly don't think I have a single thing.
I have a short metal fix if you guys don't object me starting. No, that's not what she said.
Go ahead, Rock.
We're sure? What did she say, Rock? Tell us.
She was talking about the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone.
I heard she was coming around the mountain when she came.
Who the fuck are we talking about? Who came around that mountain?
She.
Stella.
Well, who's she? Yeah.
Stella. Never heard of it. You know Stella?
Stella!
Stella's a figment of your imagination.
I don't like this Stella person. She don't belong here.
I've mentioned a few times the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone. The episode this week was about alien rock. And I was like, okay, this should be interesting. So basically they were talking about, apparently there's a lot of bands out there, hard rock and metal, that think they've been abducted by aliens.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I know.
No.
Have we also looked at the number of bands that are using acid and other hallucinogens?
I was going to say, yeah. Apart from Jethro Tull? Who's, you
know? Yeah. This show,
I heard there was one sitting on a park bench.
This show, you listen to this show, and you know, the host, you know, he tries to be very open about everything, you know, and he lays it all out there. Okay, this is what this person says, this is what this person, and they'll play excerpts of interviews, and the people that they play the interviews from, oh my God, they so believe so much what they're talking about, whatever the subject is. And this time, man, the alien rock, this guy was just like going on and on and on about how he got abducted. And he, I can't remember which band. It wasn't from one of those old rock bands, you know, like the Moody Blues or something like that, you know. But he was talking about how he got abducted. And when he writes songs, him and John, he said he had a conversation with John Lennon, actually. And John Lennon was saying that how he, John Lennon thought he was abducted by aliens too. And he was saying how he, when he wrote songs, it's like he was a vessel, like it was coming from out there, from outer space. And then you had, you know, back then, you know, they didn't have iPhones. They couldn't record what they were doing like quickly. But he said, yeah, I had to write down everything and find a recorder and have a recorder nearby and make sure they record everything, because he said, because once it's gone, it's gone. Yeah. That's just like my memory these days. You know, if I think of something 5 minutes later, I'll forget what I was talking about. So
maybe been abducted.
And oh man, and you know, and in the show, Ace Frehley was brought up, which is why I'm talking about this right now. And but you know, like Aaron, you know, you're a big Kiss fan, and then Snowy too. You know, you know, Ace Frehley's the spaceman, and that's a character.
He's the spaceman, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but
he's not
apparently
a space mountain.
Wow, that's a throwback.
Yeah. Turnbuckle throwback.
The thing is, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Ace really believes he was abducted by aliens and he really thinks he's a spaceman and blah, blah, blah.
Yep,
he plays a fucking character, you know. Yeah. But these guys, doing these interviews, I'm like, oh, my God, it's just ridiculous. And sometimes I just want to just shut off the podcast. I get mad. I get mad sometimes when I listen to this show. Because they're ridiculousness.
How mad do you get, Rock? You get so mad.
That I slap myself silly.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, sometimes it's just maddening, the stuff that these people say. But at the same time, it's entertaining, you know, and it's a short podcast. It's usually under an hour. It's usually about 45 minutes. So, you know, I keep coming back. I'm a sucker for punishment. You know, I just have to listen to it every week. So, yeah, so that's, you know, it's not super metal, but there was, you know, they talked about Led Zeppelin also at one point in the episode and stuff. So, you know, it's a hard rock fix this week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been meaning. I listen to 800 million podcasts a day or a week, so it's like I don't know. I can't even talk about them all in my metal fix because that's all it would be. So, if this is on my list, dude, don't worry, it's coming. Cool. I'm gonna give this a. You might have to send me a reminder every once in a while. Just say, hey, dude, check out, you know, Rock and Roll Twilight Zone.
See, these days for me, the most podcasts I listen to are
anything else.
Okay, I think we have a delay here. Most of the podcasts I listen to are mostly wrestling, so that's why I don't really talk about them. But the few that I listen about that talk about music, yeah, once in a while, that's why I like to mention them, because I don't listen to a whole lot of them. You know, being that we're doing the podcast, being that we're doing the podcast and stuff, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to listen to too many music podcasts. So anyway, that's all I had.
Cool. What about you, Abigail Williams? What you got?
Well, I can tell you what I have been listening to, and it has put me in such a great mood. I've been, no joke, I've been listening to Hank 3. Yee-hoo!
Oh, wow. Yes. The country stuff? Or the hard,
yeah,
the metal stuff?
Yeah, buddy. He puts the cunt back in country, and the dick back in Dixie. Yee-hoo!
Remember when we went to, when we saw him play?
Yeah, dude, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I loved being around all those Yeehaw Hillbilly Slap-a-Hoe. That, man, they were great. It was such a good fucking time. It really was. It was so much fun.
Yep.
I love it when a woman uses that word. I really do. Yeah, that one.
I like his one song off of the Hank 3. Let me see. I got to find it. But it's like something about taking pills. And it's actually pretty fun to listen to.
Oh, I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, dude, it's a lot of. I fucking love it. I was like,
yeah, I've got you one. Can't.
Let's see here. I want to make sure what I have is correct, and that I'm telling you the correct thing. Because if I, oh shit, can't be playing that on.
Well, have you while you're looking? Have you ever listened to his band Ass Jack?
I have not.
You should.
It's actually phenomenal. Neither have I. Actually,
oh my god, it's fucking heavy. Oh my god, it's hard. Oh, the song Redneck. There's a song called Redneck. Yeah. It's amazing.
Is it really?
Oh yeah, it's super. There's a song about cocaine and cocaine, just like screaming. It's amazing. It's amazing. Do it for yourself. Quit cocaine.
Let's see. It's amazing. Let's see Eric Clapton do that.
Yeah, dude, I love it. There's this song he did for Hank 3 on let's see here. What the hell is this? A Hank 3 Straight to Hell album. It's called Pills I Took. And when I was listening to it, I was like, this is the fucking country hee-haw rock hillbilly lifestyle that I'd fucking live if I was living in the mountains somewhere in West Virginia. And and I went and I found...
Or the Carolinas.
Or the Carolinas, or, you know, anywhere south of the border. I was trying to find Hank... And I was trying to find more about him, and I found a fucking Rolling Stones article interview back in 1999 when he was 26, and it was the craziest fucking interview I've ever read. Somebody broke into his trailer at one point when because he's 26 at the time I was reading this. Somebody broke into his trailer and stole a homemade porno that he and his quote unquote lady friend made, and he said that you thought, Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson's porno was hot. That was a bunch of oohs and ahs. No, this porno was straight up fucking, like with dildos, straight up fucking. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's just
quite the character.
We just don't need to know. Yeah.
Dude, it was great. You guys have to fucking find that article and read it. It's amazing. It's it'll make your day. But I just love his background stories, and knowing it was very odd because I don't know too much about him or Hank Williams or Hank Jr. I don't know about the Hank family, but I know that he didn't get along with his dad. With
the
odd.
Hank family,
I'm sure.
Yeah,
Hank Williams. Let it go. Yeah,
I know. Okay, it's funny.
The Hank family. I mean, that's what else are they supposed to be fucking called?
The Williams family.
The Williams, the Hanks.
Yeah, the Hank Williams family.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's just funny. It was just funny the way it came out.
I just say, tell me, Hank, why do you drink?
But yeah, man, that was some good old country yeehaw slapping your knee good time. Some Hank 3.
So if you're enjoying that, check out Hank Jr.'s Family Tradition.
Okay.
Trust me, you will fucking love this tune.
Family Tradition.
Yeah, you'll be cracking up. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I can only imagine.
Well, the tagline is, I get stoned and drink all night long because it's a family tradition. Yeah, you're going to fucking love it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that sounds like the Williams family. That sounds like the
very
same
song.
The Hank family.
The Hank family.
I mean, if it's the Hank family, can they adopt Henry Rollins?
Oh,
he could be Hank 2.5.
No, I don't think Henry, honestly, you know what? I don't think Henry Rollins could hang with Hank the Third.
No, not in that sense, not with the drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
I think Hank Third parties harder than any fucking guy out there.
Oh, probably.
And yep. It's still fucking alive.
that's the family tradition there, yeah.
That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But as far as my metal fix, that's literally all I have besides, you know, mourning the death of Vinnie Paul, which I still am a huge Pantera fan. I'm so much of a Pantera fan that I can tell you the side projects for the band members. Like, that's how much I got into them.
Right on. And
reminiscing about that.
Yeah, we always knew you were...
So I've been thinking about this today after I found out, and I want to run something by you and find out you guys' opinions. So for years, you guys', I sounded like New York.
You guys.
So New York.
So for years and years and years, people have been wanting a Pantera reunion, right? Now, of course, that's not.
Yeah, that ain't gonna fucking happen now.
But you know,
well, it really couldn't happen before.
Well, people were saying, you know, with Zakk Wylde, because Zakk Wylde would be a good replacement, you know, for. Okay, but now that Vinny's gone, also, okay. Would you guys be against, let's say, Anselmo and Rex Brown getting together, and not it technically wouldn't be a reunion, but like creating like some kind of show and call it maybe the Pantera tribute? In a way, or the Pantera experience, you know, where you'd have two half of the original band?
Wait a minute. I got the perfect idea. Pantera Beyond the Grave.
that would go over like a fart in church. No.
Yeah.
I was thinking just call it fucking hostile and the two of them go out. So
but, you know,
I don't know if I'd be against it because I think you're right. I think it's going to happen because I mean, let's face it. That's what Anselmo's been wanting for a while, you know.
But they couldn't call it Pantera. That's the thing.
No. When you started mentioning this, Rock, I was waiting for you to say the word tribute and then I would be on board. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be like some kind of tribute, but with original members, you know. And I could easily see, you know, Zakk Wylde playing guitar, but drumming. I was thinking about this. Vinnie Paul had a very distinct style. He was very different from everybody else. The way he played, some of the stuff he did, nobody else did. I don't know. I've always been amazed by the way he played. So who would be a guy that could, you know, step in for this type of?
Benanti could pull it off.
See, Benanti's too precise. I don't know.
No, dude. So Benanti can hang with anybody. He can pull it off. And you know who I think would do it, though? Who's the guy in Dream Theater? Portnoy? Mike Portnoy. I could see Portnoy pulling off because I think him and Vinny were tight at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's who that came to mind for me. But you know, Vinnie Paul was very precise also in what he did, but I don't know, he feel a little looser than Mike Portnoy or Charlie Benante. Charlie Benante doesn't feel loose to me. Doesn't feel loose at all to me.
Nah, like I think Benante can pull it off. Oh no, who's the Bittner. Bittner be another good guy.
Yeah.
Jason Bittner?
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see Benante as well because he was friends with everyone from Pantera. Anthrax and Pantera were pretty tight, and while obviously I'm not personal friends of any of these people, shit like that is important to me, though.
Yeah,
like knowing that it's someone up there paying tribute, not just cashing a paycheck.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would have to be called a tribute. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like a Pantera reunion. That's just chiching and well, fuck that.
You know. You're gonna call it Far Beyond Driven.
Yeah. They could. Yeah, they could have
Far Beyond
a song
Driven
title or an album title.
That's what they'll call it.
Yeah. Anyway, food for thought.
Yeah, because that reeks of tribute as well. Because that's what all those tribute bands that were clogging up the Toronto scene many, many years ago. They were naming their garbage tribute bands after bands, and they use their album titles for their monikers and all that.
Mm-hmm. Or,
so yeah, I could see it. I could see a Far Beyond Driven. Yeah.
How about a vulgar display of penises?
I'm surprised Kareem didn't say that.
I know. I had to do an assist here.
Oh, I was listening.
Well, we're gonna have to go out on some track that kind of pays tribute to Mr. Paul, though. I think we'll come up with something.
Well, you know, you have to honestly, the only band member from Pantera that I am seriously going to give some serious street cred to is Rex Brown. You never hear a damn thing from Rex Brown. Not one fucking thing. Not a sour fucking thing coming out of that dude's mouth has ever landed on any fucking interview pages, at least from what I've seen. That guy is like very humble and keeps to himself and just stays the fuck out of everybody else's business.
Yeah,
I don't need more people like that.
I don't think he likes to stir shit.
Need more musicians.
No, he's like he's a bass player. He's mellow. But like I have never the only thing I heard from Rex Brown is his side project Kill Devil Hill. So that's pretty much the only time I've ever, besides Damage Plan and Pantera, that's the only time I've ever like heard up from him. And I think he created a book or was going to create a book, and I don't know.
Like, oh, it's out. It's out.
Yeah, it's been out for a while.
It's out.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's too bad. Like I said, when we go out, we're going to have to pay tribute to the man. Myself, I got a few things here with my metal fix. First of all, I picked up, when did a little bit of music shopping. I picked up the debut full length, or at least the debut Hell's Headbangers full length from Druid Lord, Grotesque Offerings. I picked up a physical copy of that.
Finally, what took you so damn long? No, seriously, what took you so long?
I did my rock and roll duty. I had them on the show. I spoke to them. You live down the road from their place. Did you talk?
Yeah, I go to their fucking shows and I buy their merchandise from them. So yes, I did my fucking duty. I bought it from them.
Okay, that's good. I picked up the latest record from Complete Failure, Art Gospel of Aggravated Assault. They're a really good grind band as well. A cool new solo project from Jeff Hoffman, who is most known for his time in the band Weekend Nachos. His new band Ledge put out a really cool debut record called Cold Hard Concrete, and it's just basically him and Andy Nelson from Weekend Nachos, who was also a member of the band Like Rats. I didn't know that until earlier today. I'm like, oh fuck yeah, we gotta have him on the show. That would be awesome. Grab some 7-inch singles from Mindset, Suburban Scum, and Weekend Nachos themselves. So I got busy, and I'm going to be cranking some tunes here for the next little while. It was Dad's Day last weekend, and Mrs. Snowy and my beautiful baby girl went out and bought me the Alice Cooper pop doll.
Nice.
There's a couple editions of these. Yeah. So I've got on my stereo, I have Joy Ramone, and I have a Lemmy, and I have a Jimi Hendrix. And now I have an Alice Cooper joining the little gang there. But I was thinking about it as I was putting it down. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Alice Cooper might not like this when you think about it, because the other three have left us. So if Alice is superstitious, you know, he might be like, hey, don't put me on there just yet. not just yet.
I think he's going to be fine with it, Snowy. After all, he has a song called I Love the Dead.
There we go. Yeah. Crane, last episode, you mentioned you picked up the latest Revolver magazine with Ghost on the cover.
I thought it was Disciple.
No, it was the latest Revolver. Screen still with us?
Yes, Noah, I'm right here.
Is Screen still with us?
And I love Revolver
right
and yes. Ghost. Okay. It was great.
Okay. What do I like gobbling goo? What?
No, I thought maybe we lost you. Last weekend.
We did. I walked away.
Well.
I just wandered off. I was drinking again.
Last episode, you mentioned picking up the latest Revolver.
Yes, and not Decibel or Decibel.
Right. No, it's not Decibel anymore. Right. It's Decibel, right. Sure.
That's right. Well, as our longtime listeners will remember, my streak of Revolver purchases was broken this year. I went like 12 years or whatever without missing a single copy, and I missed one. Fuck, the streak is over. Well, I've decided, well, you know, I'm not going to give up on Revolver totally. It's, you know, since the streak was over, there was a couple issues there that I was like, whatever. I kind of passed on. You were right. I kind of got lured back with this issue because it had a really cool. The very first article was with the band War on Women, as you may recall, a really cool feminist punk band out of Baltimore that you might be familiar with now as well. This is very timely. There's in it from the young lady from Code Orange talking about how she became a Pantera fan.
Oh yeah, so I read about that one.
Yeah, so when I saw it on the on the rack, and it's like I was flipping through, and it's like, oh my god, very timely, very timely. So I grabbed the latest Iron Fist with Judas Priest on the cover. It's got some Venom, Testament, Watain, all sorts of good stuff. I fucking love that magazine. As well, I ended up getting one courtesy of my buddy Ducky. He set me up with the latest DOA fanzine. Okay, now I love this. It's all brutal underground death and thrash and black and all that. He got this particular issue from the Metalhead box. He put up a video, and I'll just give you guys, go on to YouTube, find the May Metalhead box unboxing with my friend Crystal. Now, he did this video every month. He's got a subscription to the Metalhead box, the metalheadbox.com. I got no problems plugging this and these people. This is an amazing product, an amazing idea. Please check it out. Every time, like my buddy Ducky, he's got a subscription. Every time he gets one in the mail, he unboxes it. This time, local Winnipeg heavy metal model Crystal Vandalism joined him in the unveiling. And lo and behold, it's got the new issue of DOA. Okay. I immediately got on the horn with him. Dude, set me up. Set me up. Anytime the Metalhead box gives you a magazine and all that, let me know and I will take it off your hands. For sure.
Well, what if he wants to keep it?
He doesn't. Okay. He knows that it would, if he wants to keep it, fine. But he knows that it would be put better to use in Snowy's Hot Little Fists. Had some cool live experiences as well. Flash out dude, Kevin Ryan Hoover, who we had on the show, was it last year? He was the rook in the band. He's got a new project, black metal band called Nocturnal Departure, and his significant better Brooke is on bass. They had their debut show just a couple days ago, so I had to make sure I made my way out for that. And finally, oh my god, okay, the Michael Keen saga continued this week. And it happened on my watch, and this was a little too close for comfort. As you know, I work with Ninja Cat Productions. Mr. Corey Thomas brings all of these wicked shows to town, and I like to do whatever I can to volunteer, you know, my time and my services whenever I can. Unfortunately, though, I was not able to take time off of money job to show up early for this particular gig. They were bringing the Faceless in. Now, everything that's been going on, the Faceless, unfortunately, the last year or so has been making the wrong kind of headlines. Okay, between having to rechange the whole lineup and everything that's been going on with Mr. Keen's drug problems and all that, and missing shows and showing up late, and it just hasn't been very good. Okay, did I lose you guys?
No,
we're listening.
We're a captive audience.
Oh, okay. No, it's just, I'm sorry. It's just, I know we've been having some technical difficulties and it's just got a little too quiet over there.
Oh.
And normally you guys can't shut up. So I'm like, what the hell?
Did I lose you guys? Well, when you're talking about somebody almost dying from a drug overdose on your watch, it's kind of a slump moment for us.
Okay. Fair enough. Sorry. I just kind of thought that I kind of lost you guys there. Sack there. Yes. Yeah, well,
I have no tasteless jokes for that. I'm sorry. I'll try harder next time.
That's actually good. Now, Mr. Keene, it was having all of these problems. Okay. And I was really apprehensive. It's like, you sure you want to bring this band in and all that? Like, okay. Well, I showed up a little bit later. Okay, and Ducky was already there and, you know, orchestrated the whole move, the whole load in and taking care of everything that needed to be
done.
The
body.
And all that. Well, kind of close. There goes no tasteless joke.
Anyways. Hey, yeah, you threw the gauntlet. I had to step up.
I showed up and Ducky pulled me aside and he said, I kind of got some news about Michael Keene. And for that split second, it went to my head was, oh, he's fucking dead, isn't he? He shot up that one last time and he's fucking dead in our theater. No, don't tell me that. He said, well, what had happened is while he was hanging out in the green room, he started having trouble breathing. Okay, and he passed out, and an ambulance had to be called, and I just missed them pulling him out, on a stretcher and all that, and it's like, oh.
Wow.
Oh, my God, yeah. He got rushed to a Winnipeg hospital, and no word on exactly what happened from there, but apart from future shows, at least the next one in Calgary being canceled. I don't know what else is going on. Everything is kind of tight-lipped, but you know, we didn't have a second dedication. Thank God. Now the show was actually well attended. It's a good thing we kind of put it on. It was better than I thought it was going to be, like in terms of attendance and all that. The support acts were killer. Vancouver's Angel Maker put on a killer set. First time I'd seen them. Fantastic stuff. Maybe we'll drop a track here from them. But speaking, like I didn't, but Ducky was speaking after Mr. Keene had his incident and all that. Ducky was speaking with the other band members, and they said, you know what, we're fucking done babysitting this guy. You know, and it's just like, this is the second lineup that has said that. Fortunately, they had a young man on the road with him that knew all the songs. Like, I think he was, a roadie and all that. He knew all the songs. He was able to perform. And they said that Mr. Keene wasn't available for the show tonight because he was experiencing muscle spasms. Oh, okay. Oh. That's what you want to call it.
That's what Metal Injection wrote.
That's exactly what Metal Injection wrote. The next morning, I got up. Sure enough, bang, there it is. And I'm like, you fucking parasites. You're on it already. Like, what a bunch of fucking gannets. Are you guys for real? Like, but that's the press for you and all that. And, you know, the reason I'm going into this in detail, like I said, this happened on our watch and all that. And it's definitely an experience that I don't want to have. And I'm glad that it wasn't a lot worse. Please, Mr. Keene, get your shit together, buddy. Come on. I don't want to end up doing
at this point with all the abuse he's gone through, he may have serious health issues and he may be off of it all. He may be sober and everything, not on drugs, but now it's all catching up to him. That's maybe what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know me, devil's advocate.
No, you're absolutely say this, right.
The spasm's not too far. I mean, it's probably not the real cause because people like to sugarcoat, but I mean, it's also not too far from the truth either, possibly.
Mm-hmm. It's probably withdrawal or something. I don't know. Anyways, it was still a fantastic show and all that. And like I said, it's nothing I ever want to get to again.
That's crazy that they had somebody on the tour with them that actually knew the songs, because that shit ain't easy what they're playing. It's fucking...
No, it's not.
Wow, that's amazing. Whoever was with them, hats off.
Yeah. This young man's name was Taylor. That's all we really knew about him. He's not an official member of the band and all that, but the Winnipeg metal scene thanks Taylor, and for that we are going to dedicate a cool Angel Maker song to him from their latest album Dissident. This is Angel Maker with A Dark Omen.
Disgusting little creatures, soon all of you will feel my hate and suffer as I have suffered.
Yeah.
check that out now. That is the aforementioned Ledge from the cold hard concrete record with You Know Who You Are. Don't try to deny it. You know who you are. You try to convince us that you're not, but you are. You are. Go check that out. It's a really
was that
band
the song title? That's a really long song title. That was the whole song title.
Yeah. Go check that band out. Yeah, really cool hardcore sludge, shall we call? More and more nailing down band genres and sounds and all that. It's just getting harder and harder. Just go find some good music, and you can't go wrong with anything that Mr. Jeff Hoffman has put out. You certainly can't go wrong with anything that Mr. Matt Harvey has put out either. Okay, how many times has Mr. Harvey been on Radioactive Metal? Like, I can't even begin to think. Like, any time like an Exhumed record comes out, at least. And there was actually an interview that I did with Exhumed in person as well, that I kind of had a techno fuck up. It was my fault. I screwed up big time. It was actually the last time I spoke to Matt Harvey for Gruesome, not Exhumed. See how many, there's so many wicked bands that he's in, and we cover them all. We cover Exhumed, we cover Gruesome, we've covered Expulsion. In the interview, you're going to hear about his latest traditional metal band called Pounder. Their full-length debut is going to be available on Hell's Headbangers soon. We'll be talking about that with him soon. So much good stuff. So much good stuff. Right now, his most current project, though, is the new Gruesome record, Twisted Prayers. Mm-hmm. It's out
awesome album.
Now. Run, yeah. Oh, it's absolutely amazing. Run, don't walk to your record store and be sure to pick it up. On your way, though, to the record store, be sure you are listening to this in your headphones, because we are talking to Mr. Matt Harvey right now about everything. So without further ado, once again, this is our really good friend here at Radioactive Metal, Mr. Matt Harvey from a multitude of bands, but currently Exhumed. To get us there, let's grab a track from that Twisted Prayers. Let's go with Inhumane.
You said Exhumed. It's Gruesome.
Oh, see? This is it. Sorry, Matt. There's just so many awesome bands. Yes. This is Gruesome's latest record, Twisted Prayers, with Inhumane.
We'll be right back. And we'll start with, excuse me, right now as we speak, I believe it's today. As a matter of fact, looking at the clock on the wall here, your new record, Twisted Prayers, hits the new release rack in my record store right now.
All right.
So, yes, yeah.
Today is the day, yes.
Right at this second, actually. This is Gruesome. In just 4 years now, I believe, this is your second full length and two EPs. Is the time flying by with this project?
Like, well, you know, I almost consider this to be like our second album, or our third album, really, because Dimensions of Horror, I think, had like six songs on it, and I know six songs isn't a record for a band like us. We're not a doom metal band or whatever with 14-minute songs, but, you know, I feel like thematically or whatever, this is the third album, you know, with Savage Land kind of being analogous to Leprosy, Dimensions of Horror to Scream Bloody Gore, and now Twisted Prayers to Spiritual Healing. So it's not as difficult to be a little bit more prolific with this band because, you know, we have a template to follow in that we're a death tribute band. So knowing that the goal is to sound like whichever death album is sort of next in the successive line, at least gives us a sort of starting point. You know, we don't have to sort of like search around for a direction for an album like, you know, most bands that are, you know, original do. So that does help the process, you know. But I mean, that said, I'm not sure how it looks from the outside. I mean, to me, it feels like it's been a really long time in coming because I think I did all of my pre-production demos for this album, you know, my little home recording demos of the riffs and everything. I mean, I did that not last November, but the November before. So to me, these songs are all like really old at this point. So I don't know. I'm not sure how it feels to the outside. To me, it just feels like the usual sort of molasses-like process. Again, I'm sorry, yeah. This is Canada. This like maple syrup seeping out of a tree, you know, slowly oozing forward, and that's sort of how the process feels to me, very, very slow.
I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, you definitely have a different view than, like you said, someone from the outside looking in, because it doesn't seem like, you know, like this time is just flying by. It's hard to believe just how much you guys have done in that short amount. Like, okay, the basic concept of Gruesome, just to refresh people, is sort of a death, quote-unquote, tribute. But with the amount of releases and all that you've done, like, is it really? Because you guys are kind of developing your own name, carving your own niche and all that. And I don't know, when people go see Gruesome live, are they thinking, you know, are we going to see a death tribute band that would call themselves Scream Bloody Gore or something? Or are we going to see, like, I don't want to say the word legit, but like a band that's its own entity? Like, I think Gruesome's at that point where that might be the whole tribute thing might be on the back burner by now.
Well, I mean, you know, I can't really, again, I can't speak to how people perceive the band. And I mean, certainly we write our own songs, and when we play live, you know, we usually do at least one death cover. But you know, if people come to see us live, we're not going to do, you know, 50% covers and then 50% our own material or something like that. But at the same time, I feel that it is really important for people to understand that what we're doing is an homage to death, simply because I don't ever want someone to think that we're trying to pass this off as our own style. You know, I mean, we use the same cover artist. We have a similar logo. Our lyrics, you know, kind of tackle similar themes. And, you know, it's all very much by design. And it's done from our perspective, you know, in a way that we try to make it very respectful and, you know, we've had James Murphy play a couple solos on the record. When we played with Obituary, Terry Butler's come out and played bass with us, and we did a track with Sean Reinhardt and stuff. So, I mean, we're trying to let people know at every turn that, yes, we are deliberately trying to evoke the same kind of, you know, we're trying to evoke the legacy of death, and we're trying to celebrate that legacy. However, rather than simply being a cover band, we decided to write our own songs, which is sort of a goofy idea, but we did it anyway. And, you know, I think our presumption when we do go out and play a gig is that the people that are at the show are all death fans and are all there for the same reason that we are, which is to continue celebrating the legacy of that band just in our own way. You know, I kind of feel like, you know, it's like the Force Awakens, you know, the Star Wars movie. Right. Like, the movie is made, obviously it's not the same movie as A New Hope or whatever, but the movie is made to feel similar, and it's also assuming that the audience is familiar with the source material and giving the audience specific callbacks and nods to the source material, acknowledging where this new movie has come from. And so we're basically doing kind of the musical version of that, you know? And we try to make it very clear every show. We talk about Chuck, we talk about death, we play a death cover. We really want people to know that that's what we're about, is about celebrating what death has already done. And because of, you know, Chuck's own demise, is no longer able to do. So therefore we're trying to sort of, you know, carry that torch a little bit further, you know, not fill anybody's shoes, but simply celebrate the work of death.
Right on. I like the Star Wars analogy, because without a word of a lie, I'm sitting here in my Star Wars PJs as we talk.
Nice. Well, I mean, you know, I love Star Wars, and that was sort of my first thought when I saw The Force Awakens. I'm like, it's like Gruesome, but a movie. Like, all right. And, you know, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was pretty good. I liked The Last Jedi maybe a little bit better, and I really liked the new Han Solo standalone movie. It was actually surprisingly, like, super fucking fun and a real blast.
I echo all three of those for sure. Oh,
thanks. Awesome.
Yeah. I guess that's just we're of that same age and mindset, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen every Star Wars movie on opening day since Return of the Jedi, so you know, I'm not going to break that streak. I've been continuing to see all these movies, even the shitty ones, and, you know, Disney's going to keep making their, you know, a couple hundred bucks off me a year probably until I'm dead, so it's fine. I don't mind.
Yeah, that's around the White House here as well. What about the expression? Because you are in a number of other bands. Your bandmates are in a number of other bands that have, you know, carved out their own niche in the metal world and all that. What do you think of the word supergroup?
I mean, you know, to me, it's just, it's one of those words that I feel like it has a negative connotation to people. And I wouldn't think of anything in that way, but I understand why people use it, you know. And I guess, again, it's difficult for me to kind of understand how things look from the outside. I mean, I guess if I was to go back to when I was in high school and be like, oh, you're going to be in a band with a guitar player from Possess and the ex-Malevolent Creation drummer and, you know, the bass player for Derketta, I would be like, wow, that's like a fucking super group. Holy shit. But to me, it was like, oh, it's just, you know, Gus and Dan and Robin or whatever, you know? I mean, I guess when you're involved in play music on a certain level or whatever, you know, many of your friends become people that are in bands that are at a similar level or you know, also professional musicians or semi-professional musicians or whatever you want to call it. So it just seems natural that you know, you're going to work with each other or whatever. And it's kind of, you know, a circuit or a scene, and, you know, people kind of filter through each other's bands at different times. And, you know, you just end up at a certain point jamming together, and, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, so, I mean, to me, supergroup is kind of a loaded term, because it sounds like something that the record company put together, like, oh, you know, if we take guy one from this band and guy two from that band and shove them together and have them do this, it's like going to be a hit. And it's, you know, it's much more organic than that. But, I mean, it's, you know, people are going to say what they're going to say. I don't really know. I'm just trying to, you know, play music with my friends and do stuff that we like and we think is good, you know.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, it's yeses like me that go around throwing these words around, just to bug you. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't bug me. It's hard for me to relate to, you know. And I just don't want people to think that it's cynical in the way that term can connotate or whatever.
Right. Going over the song titles on this record, one that really kind of jumped out at me was At Death's Door. Now, I remember, I think you probably know where I'm going with this. There was a 2-volume compilation album series way back in the day. We're old enough that we're actually allowed to say that. But
I mean, that was exactly what I was referring to. I mean, I felt like, you know, as a death worship band or whatever, that we should have a sort of Right to Die kind of song. I'll pull the plug. I mean, that's, you know, something that is all about dying with dignity or whatever, or having this sort of self-determination to die on your own terms, just as you want to live on your own terms. And I thought At Death's Door was a perfect title, because it did harken back to those two Roadrunner compilations back in the day. The second one of which featured a death song, the Kiss cover of God of Thunder.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a cool little, you know, a little wink to the audience, you know, to those of us who are old enough to remember it. Just like the song Fate on the record is a nod to a sort of best of compilation. When Sony was liquidating the Combat catalog in the mid-90s, and they were just sort of out of printing most of the metal because it was the mid-90s and nobody was buying it, they put out these like really shitty like best of compilations, like this is the best of Dark Angel and best of Possessed or whatever, and the death one was called Fate. And so I thought, huh, that would be a good thing to sort of reference as well. So, I mean, there are, like I said, just like in The Force Awakens, there's definite nods to the audience where, you know, we're assuming that we're all coming into this with the same knowledge of the source material that we're mining for our songs, you know. But it's good. I always get stoked when people pick up on it, you know. So thank you for noticing that.
Oh, thank you. Just one of those things that just kind of, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Awesome.
In my little notes here for my next question, I just have two words followed by about 3 exclamation marks, and that's James Murphy. And you made reference to him earlier and all that. That's pretty exciting, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very cool. You know, I've known James for a long time. He worked on the first Exhumed record. He worked on the first Decapitator record when he was out here in California. He's long since moved back to Florida and does tons of great production work and stuff. And we had him do a solo on the first album as well. But, you know, we knew that we had to have him come back for this because, you know, it's our spiritual healing. And, of course, that was sort of James big coming out as a guitar player. And I think that, you know, one of the things that really made Spiritual Healing a kind of breakthrough album was James' presence on it. He really elevated the level of guitar work on a, you know, whatever you want to call it, death metal or extreme metal record. Nobody had really played those kind of virtuosic Guitar Hero type solos really before. You know, I mean, Chuck had expanded a lot on Leprosy and injected, you know, some melody and some class into the kind of death metal genre. But James came in and, you know, the door that Chuck had opened, he blew it off the hinges. And that was, to me, one of the things that really melted my face about the record when I was a kid hearing it for the first time. I was like, it's like death, but it's cleaner, it's clearer, and holy shit, listen to these fucking guitar solos. Like, fuck. So to have him, you know, contribute to the record is something that is really special to me as a fan, and it's also really, I think it really kind of brings the album that step closer to the goal, which is, you know, to sound like the lost second half of Spiritual Healing, you know.
Right Yeah, it just goes same thing. It goes back to your Star Wars analogy and all that. I think that works perfect. And James is definitely, you know what, we have yet to have James on the show. It's definitely someone we're going to get a hold of ourselves probably soon. I think we really should get on that.
He's a funny guy, man. You'd have a lot of fun talking to him. He's very cool.
Right on. Good to hear. Like, you know, when you meet, like, you and I, we've known each other, oh, I don't know how long now, but
a number, you know, of years for sure.
Yeah. yeah. So the first time that you're kind of like, what's this guy going to be like? I guess it's with anyone, no matter what field or no matter what you're doing. But if he comes well recommended from you, definitely a friend of yours is a friend of mine, man. For sure.
Oh yeah, Jimmy Murphy's good people. Don't call him Jimmy though.
No. Cool. With this record, couple cover songs as well. One, I guess, isn't much of a surprise, being Mantis's Legion of Doom, okay, and Possessed the Exorcist. Okay, now. Whose idea was to do The Exorcist?
It's something we've been talking about for a while. I may have brought it up because, I mean, Possessed is one of my absolute favorite bands. But the reason why we thought it made such, you know, why it was such a good fit was because when Death was doing Individual Thought Patterns, in the studio, Chuck and Gene started working on a version of The Exorcist that was never completed. So my thought was like, well, if Death was going to cover the song, but they never did, then, you know, we're here kind of trying to, like I said, you know, pick that torch up a little bit. So it makes perfect sense for us to go ahead and kind of finish the work that they had left undone. And with Dan also playing and Possessed, I was like, well, at least we don't have to like teach him the song. Like, he already right. knows it. And I, you know, I mostly knew the song as well. And I really enjoy singing, you know, in a similar range to Jeff Becerra. To me, I mean, that's kind of where the natural timbre of my voice falls fairly closely to. So I had so much fun. In fact, I think probably the most fun part of the whole recording for me was recording the vocals for The Exorcist. The other stuff, I mean, I enjoyed it all, but I mean, it was, you know, it was work and it was a little bit more disciplined, whereas I felt like I was really getting to cut loose a little bit when we did the Possessed cover. So that was really, that was really fun for me. And with Mantis, you know, a lot of people may or may not know that the sort of signature riff in the song Spiritual Healing is actually from the old Mantis tune, Legion of Doom. So I just thought it was a fun way to kind of point that out and to kind of connect the dots between, you know, really a more sophisticated Death album to, you know, the very early raw and nasty stuff that they were cranking out in the garage. You know, it was just Camley and Rick Ross and Chuck's mom's garage, you know, bashing out these really sort of primitive caveman-ish tunes or whatever. And I think I'm always all about musically kind of connecting dots. I like to find connections between different riffs and different bands and, you know, different eras of people's careers and that kind of stuff. So to me, I enjoy kind of talking about these musical through lines And this is a nice way to sort of present that, so people don't have to listen to me talk about it. You just listen to the record.
when you think about when those first Mantis's releases came out, like, God, they must have been kids, 16 maybe back then?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because for a really long time, I've been really into, you know, all the raw kind of early mid 80s death metal and the demos and stuff. And, you know, I've been tracking those recordings down for 20 years or whatever. And our drummer Gus isn't, you know, as familiar with it. I think he just heard Mantis for the first time when Relapse reissued it, and we're recording the song, and he's just like, "This song is fucking goofy, like, what the fuck?" And I was like, "Dude, it was written by like 15-year-olds, like, of course it's goofy, like, that's the beauty of it, you know, like, in terms of the structure and stuff, you know what I mean? It's not like the riffs are very cool, but the structure and the way the song is put together and the lyrics are, you know, they're not particularly mature because it was done by 16-year-olds, which is awesome."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And back then, like, I'm old enough to remember the whole tape trading days and all that. We thought those early demos were just, you know, like, this is the good stuff. You know,
well, I mean,
now
it's the heavy stuff. Yeah. I mean, whether it's good, I don't know. It's very unsophisticated, but it's really ahead of its time, and it's really fucking heavy. Like, the riffs are fucking brutal. So, I mean, good on them, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be, you know, the same Morbid Angel or insert band here that you were when you're 16 than you are when you're pushing 50, you know. Like,
of course not.
Yeah.
Right, and it would be weird if you were, to be honest, you know.
It would be, yeah.
I just really appreciate, you know, the energy that's sort of unfiltered by, you know, a studio production or the pressure of a record release or, you know, even the sort of musical knowledge that would cause you to not do something that might be kind of a dumb or goofy idea. I love just the energy of records like In the Sign of Evil or Welcome to Hell. And then, you know, all the demo stuff like the Thy Kingdom Come demo and the, you know, the Infernal Death demo tape and all the Massacre demos and the Ravage demos. I mean, I eat that stuff up like it's my bread and butter. I love the crudeness and the naivete. I think is something that you can't manufacture that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to revisit that stuff. And, you know, to remind yourself when you listen to Sound of Perseverance, that this is the same guy that, you know, was writing Legion of Doom in his mom's garage, you know? It's quite cool.
Definitely. Definitely. That's the whole tape trading thing is something that, like, the kids today, they're just not going to understand the mystique and the thrill. Just the whole scene was. It's just not a thing, and my heart kind of goes out to them a little bit for that.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, nowadays I think bands go to great lengths to manufacture that mystique that was just part of, you know, back then it was you were going to great lengths to dispel the mystique. You wanted everybody to know who you were. You wanted to get your picture in the fucking magazines. You wanted to, you know, get as much press as you could and, you know, mail out as many tapes as you could. And now, you know, like you look at a band like Ghost, who's, you know, one of the biggest newer bands in recent memory, and their whole shtick is manufacturing the mystique. Everybody wears a mask. Nobody goes by their real names. They, you know, kind of have like a role-playing thing in a lot of their interviews. I mean, less so now since the lawsuit, but, you know, that mystique is really important. And however you come by it, it's something that, if you can cultivate it, you can be very appealing to your audience, you know? So it's interesting, but the great thing about kids today, you know, as much as they will never understand the sort of the satisfaction you get from hunting a record down and driving all over town and special ordering something or waiting by your mailbox for 6 weeks or whatever, you know, the great thing is that they have instant access to all of this stuff. And, you know, all of this great stuff that we grew up on still has an audience amongst, you know, younger kids. You go to, you know, I mean, I saw Nuclear Assault in January, and it was like Nuclear Assault and Evil Dead and Toxic Holocaust. I mean, you know, Toxic Holocaust is hardly a new band, but compared to Evil Dead and Nuclear Assault, I guess they're newer. And it was like 1,000 kids, you know, the average age is probably 20, but I saw people from 16 to like 55. And it was raging. People were fucking going crazy. The floor looked like, you know, the DRI at the Ritz VHS tape. So it's really cool that younger metal fans are able to find the old stuff so easily, and they really appreciate it. You know, maybe they don't appreciate the process of it, and maybe they have their own take on it, which makes sense. You know, somebody's, you know, in high school now. I was in high school 25 years ago. But they like the music, and they show up to the gigs, and that's really the most important thing, you know? So I think that it's a trade-off, but it's a net positive for the scene, you know?
Oh, definitely, definitely is. Every show I go to, like, the majority of the people that I know are, like, half my age and all that, just because I'm out in the metal scene and all that. And every show, I'm just inundated with 800 million questions about metal from the 80s and this and that and all that. So yeah, it's so good to see the next generation like giving a rat's ass about the generation before them. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. I think it's a testament, I think, not only to the staying power of the music, because it's good music, but to the culture of metal as something that values its history. You know, I mean, you expect somebody at a gig, like you expect them to know the difference between, you know, Master of Reality and Heaven and Hell. And, you know, you expect them to know the difference between Screaming for Vengeance and Painkiller. Like, it's just like, this is, if you don't know this, like, what are you doing here? Like, you know, everybody should have this sort of same basic background in this style of music and the history of it, because that's sort of the whole, at this point, metal's been around for like 50 years, you know, if you count the first Black Sabbath album. So, you know, you should know about it by now, I guess.
Definitely. 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 With the Legion of Doom cover, did that, okay, being up here in Canada, like, I read Decibel every month. Okay.
I do too.
But,
yeah.
But we don't get, I guess, because of legal red tape and all that copyright bullshit and all that, don't actually get the flexi disc on the stands up here. Like, and that I hate that. I hate that, because I'll see on the magazine, it's like, in this issue, this new band has contributed this track to a flexi disc. I'm like, bullshit, there's no fucking disc in here. What are you talking about?
Well, if you buy it, you don't get it at the store. You only get it if you have a subscription.
If you subscribe to it, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't get the flexi disc either, because I've known Albert forever, and he started sending me the magazine for free, like, when he first started out, just to, I don't know exactly why. I think he was just spreading the word at that point, and I've just never, you know, brought it to anybody's attention, so I just keep getting it, and I'm not gonna complain that I don't get the records, but I'm just getting the magazine for free. So I just, hopefully Albert's not listening to this podcast. Don't cut me off.
I'm not wasting a flexi on Matt. Jeez. What is Gruesome as a band going to do when you guys run out of death albums? Like, there was only so many.
Right. I mean, you know, there's only Dream, Leprosy, Spiritual, Human, Individual, Symbolic, and Sound of Perseverance. I mean, there's seven records. So we have a little bit of time, I guess, before we worry about that. I mean, I think to me at that point, you know, we could either go back and just do stuff that we've already covered for fun, if we feel like it, or we could just, you know, become a legacy band and just, you know, show up every once in a while at a festival and trot out some hits and then, you know, go back home. Because it doesn't make sense. It feels disingenuous for us to start, you know, trying to develop our own style, because whatever audience we have, we've built because of death and because of the sound of death. So I don't want to be like, oh, well, hey, now that, you know, we've gotten people to pay attention to our band, like, let me really hit you with whatever, with this other thing, because I think that's sort of shitting on a respect aspect of the band that is really important to me. And it's also not like we don't have other bands in which to like express ourselves or whatever. If, you know, if people want to hear my personality, they can listen to Exhumed or Pounder or whatever. If they want to hear my take on Chuck's stuff, then they can listen to Gruesome. You know, that's the way it should stay.
Right. And when you do, you know, run out of these death albums, is there another band maybe you got in the back of your mind that maybe we can do this, you know, like with this band or maybe that one? You got anything going on in your in your brain here with this at all?
Well, when we did the first album, we did have a discussion. We thought, like, maybe, okay, cool. So we've done this, you know, album that's very death-like. Like, what if we do the next album, like, in the vein of Obituary, and then the next one in the vein of Morbid Angel kind of thing? And we talked about it, and it felt a little weird because those bands are currently active. And, you know what I mean? So it felt kind of unnecessary and maybe a little disrespectful to try to just be like, hey, look, you know, we made an album that sounds like Cause of Death. Like, when Obituary's out there, you know, killing it live every night and still releasing good albums, you know. We didn't want it to be weird. I think that one of the things that makes this whole concept work is that there are no more death albums forthcoming. You know, Chuck is unfortunately deceased, so that's it, you know. So there's no real other way for people to kind of hear new music in this vein or whatever, you know, or nobody else has, we thought of it first, I guess. I don't know. So to me, it feels like it doesn't really make sense to do that with another band, you know? I mean, that said, I did a project several years ago, like 10 years ago now, that was called Scarecrow, and it was very... It wasn't as slavishly dedicated to sounding like another band, but it was very heavily influenced by Metallica, who's my favorite band. And it was, you know, it was like thrash, but with, you know, singing on pitch and that sort of stuff. And it was definitely, you could tell that Metallica was our main influence, but it wasn't like our only influence, like it is with Bruce. We only have one. Right. So.
Cool. We're going to wrap this up here, but I want to give you the opportunity to get some plugs in with some of your other projects. Particularly, I want to hear more about Pounder.
Pounder, we have a 7-inch called Faster Than Fire that's coming out very shortly. We're basically just waiting for it to come back from the plant. The first song is already up on Bandcamp via Shadow Kingdom Records. And Pounder, for, I guess I should explain what it is. It's essentially a traditional heavy, you know, metal band with some sort of speed metal like tendencies, you know, like, but it's more rooted in sort of the new wave of British heavy metal and like the early, you know, Abattoir or Iron Angel or Halloween speed metal stuff mixed with, you know, your early Def Leppard and Angel Witch and Maiden and Novartis and Parallax and Getty's Axe and all that kind of stuff. So we have the 7-inch coming out, and we've finished recording our album, I think 3 months ago now. So that should be out by the end of the year on Hell's Headbangers. And, you know, it's very much just old school metal. You know, some people tell me it sounds like Merciful Fate, and some people tell me it sounds like Jake Lee era Ozzy and Sabotage and all these different various influences that we have. So it's, those are compliments, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And that's been really fun, developing that. We're actually playing tomorrow with Deceased and Blood Feast up in LA, or up in Oakland, rather. And then,
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, so that's exciting, and it's fun for me because it's quite a bit different, you know, than the death metal stuff and thrash stuff that I've been doing mostly, you know, for the past 20 years. So it's kind of fun to get, you know, it's like going from a 16 crayon box to like a 64 crayon box. You get to do a little bit more different stuff, you know.
Once again, thank you, Mr. Harvey, for coming out and hanging out with us tonight. Fantastic time as always, and we will always, like, no matter what this man does, like, we're always there for him. He's always there for us. It's just a fantastic time. Thank you so much. Now, with the new record, Twisted Prayers, okay, like, where it shows up on Billboard and the charts and all that doesn't necessarily mean a whole hell of a lot to people like us. But remember once in a while when, you know, when a record like this kind of breaks through, you kind of notice it, because Twisted Prayers, okay, this record debuted number 5 in the top new artist section.
Wow.
Number 10 on the current hard rock charts. And wow. Most importantly, number 24 in the current rock album chart, like, which I believe that's just the nice. Big one, you know? Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, for the genre, that's awesome.
It is. So this definitely puts Gruesome in, you know, one of the front runners in a lot of my Rammy categories this year already. Mm-hmm. So, hey, well it's deserved.
Excellent album. And I should have talked about it, but it's an excellent album. It's really good. It's more of the same, but, you know, it's just you can tell there's a little bit of evolution, but it's, you know, if you're a fan of Chuck Schuldiner and Death, you know, you got to listen to Gruesome.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like this project has almost kickstarted, like, there's almost another sub-genre, if you will, that, you know, the word worship metal has kind of been thrown out there, just because, you know, a band like Gruesome paying tribute to this kind of sound. And then we mentioned the band Cyst as well. They're kind of doing the same thing with their own thing. And it's like, you know, there's lots of the whole D-beat thing. And it's the reason it's called a D-beat is because it's so heavily influenced by Discharge. There's 800 million D-beat bands, you know, whose logo is in the Discharge font, or, you know, it looks just like it and all that. So there's almost a whole other genre. It's just that are paying tribute to while doing their own original material. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Few more of these artists pop up, and, you know, we might have to dedicate an episode to all of this. But unfortunately, we had to dedicate this episode to one Vinnie Paul. Do you guys have any just quick Vinnie Paul stories that you might want to share or anything? Anyone's got something to say?
All I can say is I've seen Pantera twice in the 90s. And
Nice.
Twice within the span of 3 months. They came twice to Montreal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, opening for Skid Row, and then they came and headlined and they had White Zombie and Trouble on the bill. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that's the only story I have, is I've had the privilege of seeing him twice. So, yeah.
Right on. You know what? I've never seen Pantera.
Me neither.
Believe it or not.
Yeah. I've seen Hell Yeah with Vinnie Paul.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, I've only seen Hell Yeah once. They came through, they played a festival here in Winnipeg with Hailstorm, with Avenged Sevenfold. Oh, shit, who else was on that bill? It was a big festival, and in between bands, they were kind of doing like a free meet and greet, come out onto the concourse and line up, and, you know, the members of Hell Yeah and the members of Hailstorm were doing the hello, handshake, autograph, whatever.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, at the end of the last person on the Hell Yeah table was Mr. Paul. You know, and it was nice meeting, you know, Bongzilla, the dude from Bongzilla. It was nice meeting, what's his name? Chad Gray from Mudvayne and all that. That's cool. But really, you know, I'm kind of, this is the dude I've been waiting a long time to shake this man's hand. And I did that. And he noticed my Winnipeg Jets hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Paul is a hockey player.
He's
a hockey fan. Sorry.
Yeah.
He's a big hockey fan. He's a fan of the Dallas Stars, obviously. So he couldn't help but point out my shirt, and we didn't have the Jets at the time and all that.
That was really before, right? Yeah, before Jets came back.
Before they came back, yeah.
He said, sorry,
you guys lost the Jets and all that. Hopefully you'll get it back. We had a nice little quick chat about hockey and all that, and I will never forget that. He is a fan so much of the Dallas Stars. Did they not do some sort of tribute song
or something? They did years ago. We're talking, gosh, early 2000s. They put out, as Pantera, they put out the Dallas Stars fight song.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's amazing.
Let's go out with that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's a cool track. I remember I grabbed it off of YouTube years ago, you know, and still have it because I love it. It's a really cool track.
Right. Cool, man. I want to hear that. I want to hear that. But it's time to make our way out. But first, we're pretty bad at the plugs and all that. We haven't done that in a while. That just kind of hit me now. Where can people hear us and talk to us?
They can hear us right here, Snowy.
Okay.
You going to make me work?
Oh, well, hang on. I got your rock. So, Snowy, they can find us on Instagram at radmetal666.
Okay.
Check us out on Instagram because when we go to shows, we post those pictures. You absolutely want to interact with us on Facebook. Now, I don't know what our Facebook is. Just search
Rad Metal.
Is it just Rad Metal? Thank you for that. Because I know when I try to see shows or when I see shows, I try to live stream. So you can interact with us, see the live stream, see past live streams we've got there. Twitter is also Rad Metal, at Rad Metal 666. I believe those are our three main social medias, correct?
Okay.
So then since now we've got the social medias, don't forget to go out and interact with at trve.kvlt.coffee on the Insta pages and interact with Coffee Bean Occulta and buy some True Cult Coffee to support the show and keep our lights on.
Right on. And of course, we are proud members of the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Please go and check not only our show out there, but there is a number of awesome shows, just not just music, but wrestling and pop culture and lifestyle and just everything. It's one-stop shopping as well. Earpeeler.com as well. Just 800 million wicked podcasts on there as well, in which we are proud members. So in the meantime and in between time, that's it. This has been a gross episode of Radioactive Metal. I'm Snowy White.
This is Rock.
I'm Corrine.
And this is Aaron.
Signing off.